Lectionary Lab Live is recorded by Two Bubbas and a Bible live from Gainesville, Florida and Brasstown, North Carolina. Welcome, everybody, to the Lectionary Lab Live. I'm John Fairless. I'm here with my Bubba, Delmer Chilton. Say hey, Bubba.
Hey, Bubba.
Hey, man. Good to hear you. We're getting ready, getting in the end of Advent, up for Christmas spirit. Kind of like that woman at the Wawa that's been going around hugging people. Some of y'all may have seen that internet video going around, but we're not hugging each other today exactly, Bubba, but we are going to have a good show whereby we talk ourselves and all of you who are good enough to listen through the ending of Advent, the fourth Sunday of Advent. We're going to talk about Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, Sunday after Christmas, and even pointing toward being ready for Epiphany, which will come up of course, around January the 5th, 6th. All of that means we've got a big combination show, and this is going to be our last show for 2019. We will, after taking a little holiday time ourselves, be back for January the, I think it's the 12th, Baptism of the Lord. That'll be our next show. But we're going to begin today with at least the text for December the 22nd, 2019. This is for the fourth Sunday of Advent. And Bubba, as we were talking, we're really just kind of going to talk through the themes and the pace and the kinds of things that happen. Everybody's on their own different preaching schedule these next couple of weeks. So, what are you thinking about?
Well, my image here is that I'm a big Stephen Colbert fan. I watch him every night before I go to bed, his monologue, and sometimes, and I wait till the end when he says, "And we'll be back in a minute with Meanwhile." Which is one of my favorite things, one of those throwaway news. And he always says, "There's lots of things that I put in, in my monologue, but occasionally there's this other section of other stuff we call meanwhile." And I thought while I was looking at this, this is kind of a meanwhile. Every week we do a lot of on all the texts for every Sunday, and we talk about textual stuff and that sort of thing. And that's just not going to happen today.
We're not going to talk about all 16 or 17 optional texts today.
So, and as John referenced, we got kids and grandkids and travel and this, that, and the other. And so here we're going to talk about this sort of arc that goes from this last Sunday of Advent through the Epiphany, kind of the incarnational arc, and various themes, and we'll just sort of hit some themes and highlights. One of the factors is that what people are going to do liturgically or sermon wise, December 22 through December 25 just varies by tradition and congregation.
Right.
Some people are having a choir,
to do
or the Christmas play. I know my son's church, I don't know if he's going to preach that day or not. I know the children are doing the Christmas play during the worship service on that Sunday, the 22nd. I got tons of things. And some people, for Lutherans and some other folks, boy, candlelight communion on Christmas Eve, that's a packed house. Other people, it's drive by, if anything, not as big a thing when I grow. And so we're going to sort of dwell on the 22nd through 25th and talk about Christmas style preaching,
the
birth
together, big slice right there. Yeah.
And then next we'll talk about the Sunday after and the aftermath of the birth, the slaughter, the flight into Egypt, what difference has Christmas made. We'll talk about that a little bit. And for the Epiphany, we'll talk about the Magi and the light coming and those sorts of things. And then we'll quit.
Yeah, there you go. And we'll go have Christmas. Yeah. Well, let's do it, man. We better roll along, and I appreciate that. And then y'all take and use, if you can find something here, we're glad about that. So let's see what we got going on.
So on 22nd, to reference a text, the 22nd, the fourth Sunday in Advent, has Matthew 1, 18 through 25, and it begins, "Now the birth of Jesus took place in this way." Mm-hmm. It has two basic things. It mostly has about Joseph and his worrying about Mary being his girlfriend who turns up pregnant. You know, there's that whole thing. And he has a dream that says she's good. And it makes a big point that, you know, he didn't have relations with her until after the child was born. And it ends with she born a child and named him Jesus. But in the midst of it, I think is a very important word that I think can be a theme for any Christmas preaching you do, which is Emmanuel, God is with us. Mm-hmm. This is one of the first kind of meme phrases to look here and say, oh, this God is with us, and Emmanuel could be something you'd preach anytime you preach between December 22nd and Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. I remember it's kind of like, what is the true meaning of Christmas? What are we doing here? This is kind of one of the themes I'd pick up on, is we've gone through all of this stuff and we've done all this celebration. And what are we celebrating? This beautiful baby? What are we celebrating at this nice family? You know, family values, look at this. What are we celebrating? And I mean, we pick up on themes all the time that we do. So the modern meaning of Christmas, you know, you know, Hallmark. Here's what you can't miss a Christmas movie if you want one. They're like three channels right together. 24/7 and then others. And it's always, all of these things end up being the same basic story that we used to have in the Christmas play at Slate Mountain Missionary Baptist Church every year. And here's the basic story: was some people were getting too materialistic and spending too much time on their personal lives and all this stuff. And then they encounter Christmas and something happens and they learn the true meaning of Christmas, which somehow seems to be the true meaning of Christmas is let's all be nice to each other. Let's value our family. Material stuff won't help you. You know what I mean. The various things that come. Is that the true meaning of Christmas? And we will find things in this story. Well, the Magi brought gifts. That means we should give things to each other. And, you know, Herod, he's such a rich and proud person. And Mary and Joseph, they're poor and he's born in a stable. And Mary's Magnificat, she talked. All of the poor, the rich shall fall and the poor. So, you know, all us poor people.
Right.
You know, we got to understand it's not about material stuff. You see where I'm going. We cherry pick stuff around to do this. Is that the real meaning of, you know, Christmas? Mm-hmm. And the meaning is right here. They shall call him Emmanuel, which means God is with us. And that is the assurance that the last Sunday in Advent, Christmas Eve, the birth of this baby brings us every year is this promise that no matter what's going on in this world, God is with us. Not God was with us 2,000 years ago.
Not God's going
Not
to wait.
God
and
will
be
with us.
Yeah.
You know, when we do things right, eventually God is with us. Yeah. No matter who we are or where we are or what's going on in our life, God's with us.
Yeah.
That theme could be picked up for any time you preach that
Absolutely.
Week.
And we're not digging to the text as much today, but the tie for me between the Isaiah passage and Matthew, of course, is he's referring back to Isaiah and sort of setting up, see, this is why this happened, which is one of Matthew's favorite techniques in writing.
Yeah.
But the setup to Ahaz is significant. We just sort of pay attention to the end. Oh, God's going to give a sign and it'll be a child and we'll call him Emmanuel. Well, that's great. Yep. But the setup, I think, is important and is an opportunity. I'll be bringing out the element of trust, which is attached to what you're saying. What do we really trust? And you know, Isaiah says to Ahaz, look, God wants to deliver God's people. Why don't you ask God for a sign? And Ahaz, no, I'm not going to do that to God. I'm not going to ask God for a sign. When the whole time we know Ahaz has already signed a secret deal with the Egyptians, and he thinks they're going to protect him, and the Assyrians are not going to come and kick his ass, and, you know, and so all this piety that he puts on. And so then Isaiah says, well, God will give you a sign basically anyhow. Contrast that with Joseph, who is worried, as you said, and he's like, I don't know what to do. And then he gets a word from God, and the angel comes. And I love it. It says Joseph woke up, and he did what the angel said. Yeah. He trusts the word of God. So there's a real stout difference for me between Ahaz, the, quote, anointed leader, and Joseph, lowly carpenter and spouse person of Mary. Anyhow, just had to get that in. It's a good, it's a great story.
And as an aside, not a good day to explain the difference between young woman and virgin.
Yeah, don't worry about that.
Don't go there. That nobody's going to hear that. It reminds me of my niece talking about the pastor of a church in an unnamed denomination of an unnamed city that who got up on Easter Sunday and explained in the children's sermon that there is no such thing as the Easter Bunny. See, that may be true, but it wasn't exactly what a bunch of 4-year-olds needed to hear on Easter Sunday. You just go somewhere else. Well, you leave the difference between Alma and Virgin. That's not important. Yeah. What's important is the understanding that God is with us, and the promise in Isaiah of a child is a sign that God is with us. And this child is a sign that no matter what else is going on, God is with us, which leads to my second notion around Christmas with the Lucan text that we're all so familiar with. And signs of his coming comes to mind, things you can read, you can see in the text that tell us who God is. If God is with us, great. Who is God? You know, God is with us is a positive message if you understand God to be loving, kind, generous, etc. God is with us is not such a great message if your vision of God is angry, legalistic, hard-hearted, vengeful, judgmental, vengeful. And so what are the signs in, and I'm kind of more off the traditional Luke text. Talked to somebody the other day who's been preaching almost as long as I have, and this is my 42nd Christmas as a preacher, who said, I've talked about everything in this story. I don't know what I can do. You know, you get to that thing, and I said, well, sometimes people don't need to be told as much as reminded.
Right.
And it may be time just to walk around the text a little bit. And so what do we make of Mary and Joseph going to Bethlehem, you know, or what do we make of riding a donkey? You know, one of the best ones I ever heard was Jesus came into Bethlehem on a donkey, and he rode a donkey into Jerusalem before his crucifixion. Mm-hmm. The sign that maintains throughout. What does it mean? God rides on a donkey.
Nice point. But I'm going to be curmudgeonly.
No, go ahead. Donkey in the know. I know.
Another nice detail that we've painted in to.
I know. That's what I'm saying. No, be curmudgeonly. I'm just saying. Think about things that you imagine. Yeah. There's no innkeeper either.
That's correct.
You know,
no innkeeper, no donkey. We have to. Yeah. Our minds want to supply some of these details.
Yeah, yeah.
Do I care if there was a donkey or not? No, it makes a great thought. I love
in it. Our image, you know, of how Jesus came. Well, if he had no donkey, he came walking. He sure didn't ride a horse in a chariot, is it? You know, there's various things you can play with.
Mm-hmm.
In the sign. Mm-hmm. What do those signs mean? What does it mean? The spare room, essentially, you know, mm-hmm. don't overdo the, you know, there's mm-hmm. the stable. You don't want to overdo mm-hmm. debunking the images over the years. I'm just saying, don't go. Do that. But you don't want to overdo it in the other direction. But, you know, he in Luke, he comes to shepherds working their fields and flocks at night. That's poor people whose witness isn't really listened to very much, you know. Just walking through the story and thinking what, because Luke didn't include what details he included absentmindedly. We know he's a careful writer. So what is he trying to tell us by the way he told the story?
Mm-hmm.
Or how? What is the early church trying to tell us by the way in what part of the story they retained and passed on, et cetera?
Mm-hmm.
So.
I thought it's interesting that you said the news that God is with us is good news. If you have a certain image of God, it could be a little bit terrifying.
Right.
You have a different image, and you can't help but notice that terror is right in the middle of this story. The shepherds were scared, staffless. And they're terrified. That's why I love King James and Linus quoting it. And they were sore afraid.
Yeah.
And the angel says, "Don't be afraid. It's okay. Don't be afraid. Look, here's what's going on." So, good point. Isn't it not? Sometimes we want to talk about it's universally good news. Well, we better kind of take a minute to think about not everybody may hear this as good news. So what do we do now? Keep rolling through this season.
So then those are kind of two takes on Christmas, one stemming out of the text for that is listed for Advent 4 and the other out of the traditional Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, Luke 2 text. You might also find yourself on Christmas Day, the John text, you know, came and dwelt among us. The word God was with us again, you know, and so you might want to work with that a little bit and say, in other words, read as traditionally done if you're on Christmas Eve, that story, but then begin your sermon with a bit from John, perhaps, and talk about that whole business of God came and dwelt among us. What does it mean for God to be in our presence? Some more back of that God with us. So those are some options around the time of Christmas. So Sunday after Christmas, I think the basic theme on this is what difference does Christmas make? You know, the text for that day is the flight to Egypt. And why are they fleeing? Because of the slaughter of the innocents, which is, you know, they're a day or two after Christmas. So you've got this interesting situation in which we've had this gigantic buildup. You know, let's just step outside the text into our lives. December for most people has been a gigantic buildup to this wonderful day of Christmas. Yeah. Everything's going to be great. Everything's going to be fine. It's going to be wonderful. And then we go to wherever we go for Christmas dinner. And, you know, what politics comes up, somebody, you know, what happens on these celebrations, these family gatherings, something goes off, you know, something happens. And you go, what? You know, what? And it wasn't all that. My sons loved this book. I think it was Richard Scarry. It was a wordless picture book that was a small New England town doing Christmas. And you'd have all decorating the town and the Christmas play and everybody cooking, you know, all the traditional stuff that goes with it. And the last page was Christmas trees out on the curb. and taking the city workers tights and all this stuff. And I don't remember which one of my sons was who had, when I'd finished there and, you know, we'd sort of talk our way through it. So it got to where he read the book to me before he could read, but he would tell me what was happening on that every page. When we got to that page, he would slam it shut and say, well, back to normal. back to normal. Mm. So what does back to normal mean?
Yeah.
Post that. And first of all, some disappointment. I mean, as simple as, I really thought my wife was going to pick up on that hint about the camel's hair jacket. I've just had my eye on, and instead I get a weed whacker, which is a different message than I was looking for. I mean, you know, that's a simple thing. I've been married 45 years. I've gotten lots of gifts I wanted and some I didn't. I quit thinking about that. You know, it's fine. It's an expression of her love. I understand that. But we all have that little bit. Mm-hmm. It's not quite what we thought it was going to be. And then you got this story here. The Lord has come. Joy to the world. God is with us. Everything's great. Mary's been told that you're going to have this child. Joseph was told in a dream, this is Emmanuel, God with us. And the next thing that happens in their life is this threat of all the babies going to be killed, and they have to flee. They become immigrants, fleeing terror.
You're going to have to emigrate to another country and seek for a time political asylum.
Refugees from violence, poor people who need a place to be safe. Is this what they thought was going to happen? Is this what they thought God with us meant? And then we look at our own lives and say, what did we think was going to happen about with Christmas? How was that going to change? Mm-hmm. You know. And the second thing, though, is a larger picture. What did we think God present in the world and our being, you know, our being a Christian, our being a church person, our being engaged, what did we think it was going to look like, and how is it different, and can we make bridge that gap? Philip Yancey some years ago wrote one of my favorite of his books called Disappointment with God. And I think that that's a possibility, this low Sunday, the Sunday after Christmas, of looking at what all we build up, and now here's where they are, children dying and having to flee, and where is God in this midst? And what has changed in our lives because not only of this recent midwinter celebration of family and faith, et cetera, but what has happened because God has come into the world and how are things different? One of the most sobering conversations I ever had was 20 years or so ago, and I got to know this rabbi very well, and we talked honestly with one another. I spent some time apologizing for Martin Luther's anti-Semitic remarks, and we had some good conversation, and in the midst of which we talked about the Christian understanding of Jesus as the Messiah and the Jewish not understanding, and one of the things, not seeing that way. And I asked him about that, and he said, well, we believe when the Messiah comes, things will change. We don't see much sign that the Messiah has been here.
Hmm. Yep.
And that's a hard one to argue back with. You have to change the conversation and interpret lots of Hebrew scripture in a spiritualized, allegorized way to make the case that Jesus is the Messiah. I believe Jesus is the Messiah.
Right.
But I'm not saying it's a slam dunk. It's not easy.
What has happened different
because Jesus was in the world. Has God with us? Solve the world's problems.
Yeah. These stories like the flight to Egypt, etc., they do come, and if we pay attention to them, of course, this is, quote, low Sunday, first Sunday after Christmas. Crowd was packed, you know, a week ago. It's going to be low. And so we generally don't homogenize this into the nice Christmas story. This is, your sermon title could be, It's Not a Wonderful Life After All. And so they, if we listen to them, they sort of shock us and at minimum, I think, shake us up and realize that to believe, to have faith, to claim Christ or Jesus as the Christ, as the Messiah, it's not a slam dunk. It's not, Well, surely everybody should understand this. Again, I grew up, as did you, in a culture, an evangelical culture that said, all you got to do is just go out and tell the story. Tell people what they're supposed to believe. Tell them that Jesus is Lord and that he's come and so on and so forth. And I need to recognize, I'm going to take it back kind of to your point earlier, the quote news that God is with us, that Jesus is Messiah, is good news or it's not, depending on the perspective of the hearer. And I need, at a minimum, to have some respect for how somebody else may hear this right. story. And it's not that I have to go through all sorts, jump through all sorts of hoops and all sorts of permutations, etc. I've done it and I've seen it done, but I think we're arguing for a more gritty, real world sense and explanation of this story. And you're right. What difference does it make? Or a theme we brought up earlier this season. What did you expect?
Yeah.
You know, when we were talking about John the Baptist being in prison, what did you expect? God is with us in, and y'all excuse me, I'm going to quote another one of my favorite movie lines. And I just, from Full Metal Jacket, okay, and when they're dealing with the character of Pyle, and he's got all these problems, and he's not going to make it through basic training, and the drill sergeant comes in, graphic language warning, and he says, "Pyle, you are in a world of shit." And Pyle says, "I live in a world of shit."
Yeah.
Now, what difference does Christmas make?
Right.
That, you know, that's not going to preach on Sunday. I get it. But we often are talking about what we have to think of as preachers
right.
in the study and how to deal with this stuff.
I don't remember her name anymore. And if I did, I wouldn't call it. But in one of my early parishes, I was visiting with a woman, and she says, one of the older ladies in the congregation, and I was a young 20-something. And she wanted to know when we were going to put the Christmas tree up mm-hmm. in the nave. And the good Lutherans, we had a gigantic chrismon tree. And so it usually is up all the way through Advent. So what Sunday are you going to put? When are you going to put it up? And mm-hmm. I told her, and I said, when are you going to take it down? And I told her, and after Epiphany, she said, well, I'll see you after Epiphany. Because I thought she wanted to be there for the, you know, when we mm-hmm. did it. I told her what Sunday afternoon, before, you know, mm-hmm. Christ the King, the youth group, and various people mm-hmm. were going to work mm-hmm. on it, so be ready for that and all this. Mm-hmm. Her husband died in December. The funeral was at the church. It was fully decorated. Mm-hmm. And she didn't go in the building.
Didn't want to see all that.
Next year she went back and she couldn't take it. So it's always been an image for me that while we're gaily decorated, there are people who are sitting there with a gigantic load that this isn't helping. Mm-hmm. And we need to say, what is the good news for those folks if they're there? Okay.
There you go.
All right. So that's
that was pretty heavy.
Got the message, you know, the slaughter of the innocents and the flight into Egypt. It's pretty heavy. You know, it's not a joke. I mean, I remember hearing sermons about, you know, a little kid at Sunday school time was drawing Christmas pictures, and all the kids were drawing that came over, and there's a airplane, and people, one of the teacher being a good teacher said, well, Jimmy, tell me about your picture. And he said, well, that's the flight into Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
There's Jesus and, you know, Mary and Joseph and all. Mm-hmm. I said, oh, okay, well, who's this up here? She said, oh, that's Pontius the pilot. You know, my point there is I don't suggest you use that.
Yeah.
Because this is not
this is
humorous flight into Egypt. These are people who might die crossing the river. You know, these are people who have left everything.
Yeah.
And don't know how they'll be welcome, but they know what's ahead is better than what's behind.
Right. Right.
So then it moves the very next Sunday to, the Epiphany. I know the Epiphany is January 6th. It's not on the Sunday, but it might be. I don't have my liturgical calendar.
We're on the 5th. January 5th is the Sunday. Yeah.
So my theory is almost everybody's going to do Epiphany because the next Sunday is the baptism, and very few of us are going to have a Monday night Epiphany service. So if we're going to deal with it, we'll do with it on the 5th, which is technically, I think, the second Sunday after Christmas. But we're talking about the Epiphany and the Magi and the Light Cometh. If you've been fair and didn't introduce the wise men immediately after the shepherds, you can do this a couple of years later. It took them a while to get there. But the question is with this one, what is the symbol here? What does it mean that the light hath cometh? The light comes.
Right.
What is this light, this guiding light? There are all kinds of things that one can say. But I remember some years ago, I was trying to talk about this issue of light, and I told a old mountain joke about the church that was trying to order a chandelier, and the man argued against it that nobody here knows how to play it. Nobody here knows how to order it. Yeah. And what we really need around here is some more light. And the very next day, one of my parishioners came in and laid a $10,000 check on my desk and said, I've been thinking about what you said yesterday, and it really is dark in the sanctuary, and this is a contribution to buy some chandeliers.
We do need some light.
And I am proud of myself that what I did not say to him, oh, you totally missed the point.
Yeah.
What I said was, I was hoping somebody would understand what I was talking about. Thank you very much for your generosity. But, you know, the question is, how do we talk about that? How does the light shine, and how does it show, gradually or suddenly? What does light, what little light mean? Mm-hmm. That seems to me the theme, more than worrying about wise men still follow him and some of these things, you know, and what are the, I think the light issue and the following star is the important thing for this day.
That's what we're heading for. There's light, there's Epiphany, there's being revealed. If you use the term revelation, people automatically go to the end of the Bible. But things are being revealed. And so whether you're working the text for the second Sunday after Christmas, the gospel text comes back to John chapter 1, that the light shines in the darkness and the darkness doesn't overcome it.
Right.
Or you work with the Magi seeing a star and following the light. The light image is going to be important. And of course, we're going to carry that throughout the season of Epiphany. Well, Bubba, we've kicked around some stuff here today, and hopefully all of you all are kicking around. And this was kind of a show where you just have to pick this stuff up, take it and slice it off and use it however and whenever it might work for you during this this season of preaching.
Speaking of Colbert, last night on Meanwhile, he had this thing that someone in England is marketing something called Christmas Tinner, TIN, because a tinner and a tin can. It's Christmas in a can, and it shows an illustration of everything from a Christmas dinner in layers in one can. So this was a layered Christmas in a can kind of show. Pick what you like out of this or eat the whole thing.
Christmas preaching in a can. All right, man. Well, listen, I've enjoyed it. A Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, Happy Holidays to all of y'all, as we would say. And we will be back in 2020. Again, our next show will be targeting the text for January the 12th. We'll be coming back to speak of the baptism of our Lord, and we'll caretone from there.
Well, let's remind folks that on the Lectionary Lab website, you can, if you just need the sound of our voice on these various Sundays and texts, there is an archive.
There is.
And you can go find it and listen to us talk, and we'll probably contradict ourselves many times.
Well, and there's a sermon or two on that website. Go to lectionarylab.com. Go on the left-hand side, and there's a search box. You can type in any of the texts for any particular Sunday, and whatever we've done, written or spoken, will pop up for you. So if that helps, that's good. Not much left for us to do today, Bubba, other than to tell everybody bye.
Everybody bye.
Lectionary Lab Live is a Two Bubbas and a Bible production. Our opening theme is Safety Net, performed by Riot. We go out today with Who Will Save the Children? Composed by Joel Emerson from the musical Mary and Joseph, performed by the Children's Choir of Brook Hollow Baptist Church, Nashville, Tennessee.